continue our discussion for the last several weeks. We've been talking about the definition of bylaws. How come you have certain times, you have situations where it looks like I own the object, can't think of anybody else who owns the object, yet the halacha says it's not considered to be a full-fledged bylaws. That is nafkaminas, ladina, in many areas of halacha. So we developed the idea in the last couple of weeks of what's called the shalova in a b'shuso. That sometimes I could have the legal ownership on the item, but for all practical purposes, it's ain't a b'shuso. And when something is ain't a b'shuso, even though it's shali, and b'shuso, I can't transfer ownership on it. I can't be makdish, I can't sell it, I can't be mafkrit, etc. If it meets those criteria of shalom yad b'shuso. So we mentioned in the last year that there was a chiddush of the Ketzos. The Ketzos suggested that whenever something is also b'hanoa, it's automatically considered to be shalom v'ein b'shuso. It's still mine. He has a raya from Rishonim v'sach sukkah, perhaps. That's still considered to be mine. Yisrael is still shalom, albeit the ein b'shuso. And therefore, you can't transfer ownership, you can't affect the hekdesh or kinyan or hefka, etc., on something which is also b'hanoa. That was Yisrael. We spoke about the arichos last week, why that should be true or not be true, whether that's called ein b'shuso, not called ein b'shuso. That was the aside from the Ketzos. So we take a step back. What prompted the Ketzos to this conclusion? That Yisuri Hanoh, one can't transfer ownership on, one has to analyze, is that really true? Is there any Gemara that says that the Feirish, that something which is also Banoh, so one is limited, either according to the Ketzos, it's Ena B'shuso, or perhaps according to those before the Ketzos, thought it was Mamash Ena Shalom, according to Sabi Shodim. Where does the Gemara say that? Where does the Gemara indicate to us that just because the halacha prohibits you from getting Hanoh from something, that changes your monetary relationship with the item? So there are two Gemaras that seem to bear out this idea. One of them is the Gemara we spoke about several times, the famous Gemara Maseches Pesachim, where the Gemara says that chametz of Pesach is ena b'shusa shel adam, and therefore once the chametz becomes asa b'hanoa, one can no longer be mevatel chametz. The Gemara says in Pesachim and Davav that bitul chametz must take place before this man Isser kicks in. This man Isser kicks in min haTorah and Chatzos, when the Rabbanan an hour before Chatzos. Once the chametz becomes asa b'hanoa, then all bets are off. At that point, it can no longer be mevatel, no longer be mafkir the chametz. That's one Gemara that seems to indicate that once something is also banah, so somehow there's a detraction from my ownership rights, and my ability to transfer those ownership rights, or to be mafkir, to be vatla, etc. And there's another Gemara in Bava Kamma in the fourth parak, where the Gemara says, if I have a shor haniskol, my animal kills somebody, so kolzman that Bezdin hasn't been going medina, once Bezdin has not yet decided that it's a shor haniskol, they haven't passed in shiloh on it yet, so then if I go ahead and I sell it to somebody else, I go ahead and I makdish and I mafkir it, so then those chalosim are valid. But if it's an igma dina, once Bezdin decides that it's chayef skila, so then it's also banah. Once it's also banah, so then I can't be meicher, I can't be machter, I can't be mafker, I can't be machtashit, etc. So those are the two gemaras that seem to bear out this idea. So whether you say, like those who preceded the Ketzos, that it's called Eina Shaloi, that Chametz of Pesach is Eina Shaloi, and Shor HaNiskol is Eina Shaloi, whether you touch it up a little bit like Ketzos, the chametz of Pesach is shalom, albeit ain't a b'shuso. Either way you go, it sounds pretty clear from these two gemaras that there is such a concept in halacha that when something becomes also banah, this is not just a question of issa v'heter. It's not just that there's a dinim in arachaim in your day that prevent me from using it, but there's some kind of a change in chesh mishpat. The issa v'no changes my relationship in terms of momentus of the item, either by removing it entirely from my bialus, or at least relegating it to a category called shalom ain't a b'shuso. However, one can question whether these two Gemaras are really the rule, or perhaps these two Gemaras are the exception to the rule. Maybe there's something unique about these two, Yisuri Hanoh, the Yisuri Hanoh of Chametz of Pesach, and the Yisuri Hanoh of Shor HaNiskol, that may be the exception to the rule. Maybe not only Yisuri Hanoh, anything really changes dramatically. Maybe these two Yisuri Hanoh are different. Maya, Manishtanu, these two Yisuri Hanoh. So the Chasam Sofer and the Tshuva, the Nesivis, both developed the following suggestion. There is something unique about these two Yisurim and that may not exist by other Yisurim. Namely, not only is it also to be Nehneh from Chametz Pesach, but the Torah is telling me to get rid of it. The Torah is being mitzavah me. There's a mitzvah Teshvisu. There's an Yisurim by Rav Motzei. The Torah is telling me to get it out of my Rishos as fast as possible. Or, for example, so you have another type of Yisurim like that, like Avodah Zarah. Not only is Avodah Zarah also Banah, but the Torah gives us a mitzvah Abeti Abdun, the mitzvah, the destruction of Bir Avodah Zarah. But when it comes to Shor HaNiskol also, not only is the Shor HaNiskol also banah, but the Torah is telling me what to do with the Shor HaNiskol. Sokol Yisokol HaShor, you're supposed to stone, you're supposed to get rid of it. It's stone, Ibud Min HaOilam. So maybe one could suggest, these acharonim, when you have an Issa Hanoah, that the Torah is screaming at me and saying, get rid of it, throw it away, get rid of it, throw it off the cliff, or burn it in the fire, or destroy the Avodah Zarah. The Torah is screaming that not only is it also Hanoah, but the Torah is telling me there's a mitzvah, there's a chavas, a destruction on the item. So those types of items, I can understand what the Torah is saying. How could you own it? In the same breath, the Torah is saying, throw it into the fire, and the Torah is saying, oh, it's okay, you really own it still. You can sell it if you want. But the Torah is saying, get that shore and throw it off the cliff. But if you want, you can give it as a gift to the base. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So it's not the Yisra HaNoah Shabo that's Mavatel, that's Mavkiya, the Bailos Shabo. But rather, it's the Chavis HaSreifa, the Chavis HaBira, the Chavis HaSkila. That's what undermines my ability to own it. Either my ability literally to own it, or at least my ability to have it b'shusi. But what if you have other Yisra HaNoah? Let's say, for example, Basa B'cholof. So Basa B'cholof is not Tony Ben Mirahilo. If I happen to have a cheeseburger, good. So I take it, I put it aside. I don't want anyone to eat it. I put it aside, I throw it out, whatever I do with it. But it's not, I don't have to run that split second and go destroy the cheeseburger. So whenever you have something which is awesome, I know, but not necessarily Tony Ben Mirahilo, maybe the halachas would be different. If that's the case, then you have a whole series of types of Yisra HaNoah, which we're not sure which category they fall into. So certainly Yisra HaNoah for sure, Tony Ben Mirahilo, that's not a question. Those are the Avodah Zarahs, those are the Shai Niskals, those are the Chomes of Pesach, that we understand. On the other extreme, you have the Basa B'cholov, which is not Tony Ben Mirahilo. Then you have other Yisra HaNoah that fall right between the cracks. That's what the Mishnah says in the end of Maseches Tamura. They're what's called the Yisra HaNoah of Nisrafin versus the Yisra HaNoah of Nikbarin. The Mishnah spells out that certain Yisra HaNoah are disposed of through Sreifa, and certain Yisra HaNoah are disposed of through Kvura. So let's say Basa B'cholov is through Kvura, but Orla and Kiliyah Kerem, the first 3 years of fruit, or the, anything that was grafted, graft grapes together with grain, so that's considered to be Kiliyah Kerem, it's also HaNoah. Those are Minan Nisrafin, so those are Dinah Minan Torah. Some Yisra HaNoah are derived from Sukkim, the Minan Nisrafin, and others are Minan Ikvarim. So now the question becomes, if we're working with our with this category, that certainly Yisra HaNoah, which are Tony Ben Mirahilo, where the Torah requires of you to destroy, so that becomes no longer yours, either no longer yours or no longer b'shuso. But other Yisra HaNoah, not like the Gvarim, the Torah doesn't say you gotta bury it the second. The Torah doesn't say you have to get rid of it through Kvura. It's not a good idea to leave it around, but it's not a Chavas Kvura. So those Yisra HaNoah maybe are still considered to be yours. What about the Yisra HaNoah of Nisrafin, like Orla and Kiliyah Kerem? So it's a big machlekes of Yishanim. When we speak about Yisra HaNoah of Nisrafin, Orla and Kiliyah Kerem, what does Nisrafin mean? Does Nisrafin mean that you have to burn it? There's a chayv asreifa, the same way there's a chayv of bir chametz, the same way there's a chayv of bir v'nizar, the same way there's a chayv to be cycled ashore, there's a chayv to burn Orla and Kiliyah Kerem. You have to take the paris Orla, mamash thrown into the fire, you must do that, no question about it. That's what the din of Nisrafin is. Or nah, that's not what Nisrafin means. Nisrafin means that you don't have to burn it. If you want to throw it out, you can throw it out also. So why is it called Minan Nisrafin? Because the Mishnah says that anything which is Minan Nisrafin, if you go ahead and you burn it, the Efer becomes Mutter, the ashes become permissible. Kol Nisrafin Efer Mutter, Kol Nikbarin Efer Nasar. If you burn a cheeseburger, the ashes are still Asa Bana. But if you burn the Paris of Ola and Kiliyah Kerem, then the ashes are Mutter Bana. So maybe when the Mishnah says Kol Nisrafin, the following things, Elam and Nisrafin, the Mishnah doesn't mean to say there's a Chavas Reifa. All the Mishnah means to say is that there's a Rishus to be Sarif, and there's an advantage to be Sarif, and there are ramifications of being Sarif. Namely, if you want to be Mata the Efer for something, then you can be Sarif. But are you Mechuv to be Sarif? No, you're not Mechuv to be Sarif. That's a big Machlekes of Yishanim. So we spoke about that in the Shir, about, I don't know if we mentioned Nicole Volker one time this year, but I gave a Shir here between Chamayr about the Clementines, about the Israeli Clementines. I think we spoke about it. We gave a shit about it. I forgot already. There was a whole tumult earlier this year about some of the Clementines that were coming from Eretz Yisrael. There was a chashash of Orla on them, depending on who you're asking, what the facts were. But assuming there would have been a real chashash of Orla on the Clementines, so the question was, the person by mistake bought them in America, and that question is, what do you do with them? Do you, so the Mishnah says, the Minan Nisrafin. So there's a machlekes of Rishonim. Does that mean I mamish have to be Sirit? I mean, I have to be Sirit. Well, I make sure nobody eats them. I dispose them in another way. No one's ever going to come anywhere near them. I throw it into the garbage dump, and no one's ever going to find them. So maybe that's good enough. There's no chavis reifas. That's a big machlekes of Rishonim. So there are different opinions in the Acharonim about that also. So this particular person wanted to be machmer, so he burnt his clementine. So I have it on my phone somewhere. And we'll see if it was back in full of Bachum a few months ago. So we have a picture of the Shreifas Orla, which may not have really been Orla anyway, but that's a different, another time, another place. But I call upon him, if you hold that the factor what creates the Eina B'shusu, or creates the Eina Shalo, it's not so much the Issa Shalo, but rather it's the Chi of destruction, it's the Chi of Tol, it's Tol Yibim Min Ha'olam. So then we would have to analyze case by case and see, Chametz Pesach is Tol Yibim Min Ha'olam, Avod Azor is Tol Yibim Min Ha'olam, Shor Niskol is Tol Yibim Min Ha'olam. Other things? Not necessarily. So you'd have to go case by case to figure out what the status of that particular item is all about. When it comes to Shor Niskol is a tricky one to begin with. We don't have too many Shor Niskol Shailas, but Shor Niskol is a funny type of Isra Noah for the following reason. Because there is a big machlokes of Rishonim, at what moment in time does the Shor Niskol actually become Asav HaNoah? So the Gemara says that, Beferish, that before Gemar Din, it's for sure not Asav HaNoah. That's not a question. Once it's Nigmar Dino, then the Mishnah, then the Gemara says in the comment of Namei, once it's Nigmar Dino, then you can no longer sell it. Once it's Nigmar Dino, you can no longer be Makdish. So why is that true? So the simple reading of the Gemara is because it becomes Asav HaNoah at that point. So Rabbi Natam disagrees. Rabbi Natam says, no, it's impossible for the Shor Niskol to be Asav HaNoah when it's still alive. It only becomes Asav HaNoah after death. Either if it's stoned, if it's Mamish Niskol, then for sure it's Asav HaNoah. Or even if you jump the gun and you shecht it, since there was Gemar Din, it also becomes Asav HaNoah. But Rabbi Natam argues that the Isra HaNoah only begins post-Misa. Kol Zman that is B'chaim, it's inconceivable. It's not Shaykh for it to be Asav HaNoah. So according to Rabbi Natam, so why can't I sell it? When the Gemara quotes a bright that says, once it's Nigmar Dino, so I can't sell it, why can't I sell the Quentin Benetam? What's the problem? So that's a big palace. After learning the Sugi of Shor Niskol, trying to figure out, according to Rabbi Natan, nothing we're saying is true. We've been working with the assumption that Shor Niskol is also Banah, and therefore it's either Enish Shalom, or it's Enish Shutso, it's Tol Nivin Olam, all different reasons why the status of Shor Niskol should impact upon my bias. But according to Rabbi Natan, there's no Shor Niskol to talk about. So why can't it be sold? So you gotta read the Taizman, Taizman of Akam, I have a whole discussion about what that means in a Macha according to Rabbi Natan. But if we put aside Rabbi Natan, if you go with conventional wisdom, the Shor Niskol at the time of Gemar Din becomes Asav HaNoah, so then you'd have to further figure out, well, why is it that something Asav HaNoah becomes no longer able to be sold? Either it's in a Shalom, in a Bishuso, or maybe it's not by all Isra HaNoah, maybe only certain types of Isra HaNoah. Hope on him, really, going back to what we spoke about the last couple of weeks, so we have this category in Halacha called Shalom. We have a category in Halacha called in a Bishuso. We had the Eina B'shusos of Gezela and Aveda and other kinds of Eina B'shusos. Then we had this other kind of Eina B'shusos that the Ketzos introduced to us that Isra HaNoah also can potentially impact upon a person's bialus. So we move on now to a related topic in terms of ownership, in terms of who's considered to be the bialim on something. But up until now, the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about when something is asar, so it's the Issa Shavo that may impact on a person's bialus. Now we go to the other extreme. Now we talk about something which is more positive, namely, sometimes you can have a situation where something is not asar, but something is kadosh. There's a certain kadusha to something, positive qualities, not negative characteristics, positive qualities, and sometimes something being kadosh can detract from a person's bialus. I could own something, but since this item has kedusha to it, so maybe I'm not considered to be the full-fledged owner.
When you talk about Rabbeinu Tam, you still can get hana'a from it until it's dead. But the whole idea of a shore, don't people like work? I mean, yeah, the whole idea of after you've killed somebody, you want to get it out of commission.
Right. So Rabbeinu Tam holds...
He's going to say you can still work with it and do things with it?
Right, so Rabbeinu Tam says Beferish, Rabbeinu Tam says there's a chiv to go be sokal it. So Beis Din not going to let you do that. Beis Din has a chiv to be sokal it. They're going to stone it. They're going to take it and kill it. But Kozman, that hasn't been done yet, Beis Din hasn't caught you yet. Beis Din hasn't taken the shore away from you yet. So then, if you want to work on it and plow on it, Rabbeinu Tam says it's okay. So Rabbeinu Tam, if you want to ride the animal to the base of Skila, that's okay. On the way, you want to get a little plowing as they're getting ready to stone the animal, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that's smooth. According to the other Rishonim, once they come in, then it becomes Asav HaNoah. But Enoch Hanam, you're right. Okay, 100%. Even according to Rabbeinu Tam, this animal's not going to be around very long because the Beis Din is mechuyev in the midst of Sokol Yisokol Asher. So comes the Gemara in a few places in Shas, in Maseches Pesachim, in Sukkot, in Kedushin, and speaks about a type of a property that at first glance should belong to me. On the other hand, there is a certain Kedusha Shabbo, and that Kedusha Shabbo may impact on my bialus. And that's the sugya of Maisa Sheni. The Maisa Sheni, we know the Torah tells us that every first, second, fourth, and fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, so not only do I have to separate Trumas and Maisa Risha, that's every year, but in those 4 years, I have to separate Maisa Sheni, I have to take off a second Maisa, and what do I do with that Maisa? I eat that Maisa. I bring it to Yerushalayim and I eat it. I eat it in Yerushalayim, B'Kedusha, I eat it B'Tar, I have to go to the mikveh first, I have to make sure the Maisa doesn't become Tomei, but basically I eat it myself, my family, my friends, we eat the Maisa Sheni. What if there's so much Maisa Shaini and I can't schlep to Yerushalayim, I live far away? So then the Torah gives us a chiddush in Parshas Re'eh, I can be paid to the Maisa Shaini. I put aside coins, the value of the Maisa Shaini, and I transfer the Kedusha of the Maisa Shaini onto the coins, and then when I come to Yerushalayim, I'll be on the regular. Another time during the year, I come, it's much easier to carry a couple of coins than it is to carry baskets of fruit. So I bring the coins to Yerushalayim, and then I'm paid to the coins, I take the Machal of the coins, I take the Kedusha of the coins, and I transfer it onto food. Loved off fruit, but it has to be some kind of a certain types of food. And I transfer Vinasata Kesav and Bokov and Son of Yanam Shechar, and I go in and I eat that food in Yerushalayim, Bikadushas Maisa Shaini. So those are the dinim that appear in Parshas Bukhikosa and the dinim of Parshas Re'eh. The dinim of separating Maisa Shaini, of preferably you bring it to Yerushalayim. If you can't bring it to Yerushalayim, then you can go ahead and be paid it. As man as that, we have a little bit of a watered down version of what we do with Maisa Sheni. We separate Maisa Sheni, because if you don't separate Maisa Sheni, then it's tevil, then you're not allowed to eat the fruit. So everything that grows in Eretz Yisrael, we do separate Maisa Sheni from. But what are we going to do with the Maisa Sheni? We can't bring it to Yerushalayim, because you can only eat it the condition of Tara. You can only eat the Maisa Sheni when there's a Beis HaMikdash, and you can only eat it when you're Torah, and it's Torah. Nobody's Torah anymore. So we're in a pickle, so we can't eat the Maisa Sheni as man as that. So we have to invoke the principle of pigeons. That's what we do. We're paid in a Maisa Sheni onto coins. Now what do? So you have coins. So in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, you would hold on to those coins and bring them to Yerushalayim at some point. But we can't do that, because the same way we can't eat regular Maisa Sheni, we can't eat food that was purchased with the coins of Maisa Sheni, because that's also has Kedushas Maisa Sheni to it. So we're mamash in a bind. So we don't do anything with the coins. We hold on to them. Until when? At what point do we hold on to the coins? Do they always have condition to them? The fruit you're allowed to eat, the fruit is chulin. But what about the coins? So then there's another thing called beer, Maisa Sheni. At the end of the third year, the end of the sixth year, so the Torah says in Parshas Re'eh, that all, Parshas Re'eh, and Parshas Kisavo, that all the maestras that haven't yet been taken care of, you have to take care of it right now. And Erev Pesach, right? We'll call it Saman Pesach, Erev Pesach, Machlek Yisav Yishenim, but right around Pesach of the, after the 3 years are up, it's really the Pesach of the fourth year, it's really the Pesach of the seventh year, so you have to make sure that any Maisas that haven't been given yet have to be given. So you have to give the Maisa to the Levi, whatever has been given, and the Maisa to the Ani that has been given, and any Maisa Sheni, you better bring to Shalom quick. You have to eat it right away, and if you don't, then you have to dispose it. You have to get rid of it, you have to destroy it. So that's what's called Beer Maisers. So that's what the Mishnah says, that if you have any coins left over which have Kedushas Maisa Sheni, so you have to destroy those coins at this time. After this point, that's already a bitul mitzvah. So that's exactly what we do. So we're mafresh Maisa Sheni for the course of 3 years. We're putting the Maisa Sheni onto coins, and we leave those coins somewhere, we put them aside, and we leave those coins until Erev Pesach of the fourth and seventh year. And at that point, we destroy the coins. We do what's called Beer Maisa Sheni. So how do you destroy coins? It's not such an easy thing to do. So the Mishnah is speaking about Yolech Liyam HaMelech. You take the coins and throw them to the Yam HaMelech. It's going to destroy them for sure. Eventually, no one's going to find them in the bottom of the Yam HaMelech. Even the people who are going through the Yam HaMelech, they're not going to go underneath to find the coins. So the coins are before them in the Eilam. So if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you go to Yam HaMelech. That's great. But you don't have Yam HaMelech. So the Pesukim say you can destroy. You throw them in a place that no one's ever going to get them. So you throw them down the sewer, you throw them into the river, whatever. You figure out an eitz, you figure out a way to destroy the coins. So in yeshiva, we have a minhag every 3 years. We have a special beer Maisa Sheni. So how do we have beer Maisa Sheni? So Rabbi Willig usually brings his coins over the course of a couple of years. So he has coins that people have used for pigeon Maisa Sheni. He has coins set aside in his shul that people could use for chilul Maisa Sheni. So the coins are set up in such a way that you can keep on using them. Once the kedusha fills up on one coin, so then that kedusha transfers to another coin. You have a perpetual pigeon Maisa Sheni machine. So the bottom line is he has a couple of coins that are filled with Kedushas Maisa Sheni money. So every fourth and seventh year, so we destroy those coins. So we don't do it the old-fashioned way of throwing it into the river or throwing it into the sewer. We have a more Taramada approach. So we destroy it in the chemistry lab. So we have a whole laboratory, a whole different years we've tried different kinds of acids. So one year they did nitric acid. One year I think it was sulfuric acid. I don't know. Some years works better than others. But bottom line is that this is a mitigan yeshiva. I will comes with they give him the big goggles and it's a big test tube of acid and he throws all the coins into the beaker of acid and goes, oh, focus, focus, and it blows up and shine. That's our mitzvah beer, my Jenny. Remember a couple of years ago, we usually do it right before Pesach. for that particular day, somebody called me to help them with the Shuluch HaKen also. So I went to do Shuluch HaKen and BMI Sasheni on the same day. So my kids came with me for the show, for both of those mitzvahs. So I had to write a mitzvah note for them for school for the next day. So usually you write these very boring mitzvah notes. You know, my kid cleaned up for Shabbos, my kid helped his brother, my kid didn't kill his younger sister, whatever it is, those typical mitzvah notes. So here, mitzvah note, we did BMI Sasheni, we did Shuluch HaKen, the teacher told me we're also, I was going to write, we brought an Egla Rufo, we brought it in the Dachas, we share this stuff. Those are the more exciting kinds of mitzvahs. Anyway, the bottom line is, so we have Ma'ase Sheni today, it's just the real Ma'ase Sheni in the sense of eating in Yerushalayim that we don't have. But let's say in the old days, Zvan Shem HaSamikdash HaKayim, so a person has Ma'ase Sheni, he separated Ma'ase Sheni, so he's got a whole barrel of a fruit, which has Kedushas Ma'ase Sheni, but then he's on his way, he's going to bring it to Yerushalayim. So but right now he hasn't gotten around to eating it yet, so he's sitting in Yerushalayim, or sitting perhaps outside, so wherever he is, he's got this fruit which is about to be eaten by Kedushas V'Tahara. So the question comes, who owns this fruit? Who is the Baalim, who is the halachic owner of this fruit? So that's following the theme of everything we've been talking about up until now, that sometimes it looks like I'm the owner, nobody else is the owner. No, maybe since there are certain halachas that restrict what I'm allowed to do with this fruit, maybe that's considered to be a change in bialis as well. What are some of the restrictions? So I can't do whatever I want with this fruit. I can only eat the fruit in Yerushalayim, I can only eat it betara. So it's not a free-for-all, it's not a hefker belt that it belongs to me totally. On the other hand, those are isvahetri surim. Those are isvahetri restrictions. Those are chayim yirdei restrictions. But in terms of chashim mishpat, nobody else owns it. I separated the fruit. It's not like Truman and Maisa that I'm going to give it to the Kohen and Levi. We spoke a little bit about that in the previous shiur about Tovas Hano. When it comes to Trumas and Maisa, so the halach is I'm not allowed to keep it for myself. I have to give the Truma to the Kohen, the Maisa Rishon to the Levi, etc. So that all I have is Tovas Hano. All I have is the decision as to which Kohen, which Levi I want to give it to. So that was a pilpul in the Gemara. That's all machlekes amarai. Is Tovas Hano moment, not moment. Here, there's no Tovas Hano issue. I'm going to eat it myself. The only thing is, I have to eat it in a certain manner, certain sur, etc. So, what's the din? It's not considered to be mine or not. So, what's the test case? How would you know whether it's considered to be yours or not? Everybody agrees that nobody else could steal but Ma'ase Sheni. Everyone agrees that I'm the one who's going to eat it. Everyone agrees I can't eat it if I'm tummy. Everyone agrees I can't eat it outside of Yerushalayim. So everyone agrees to all the facts. So isn't this just an academic, theoretical question whether I'm the quote-unquote owner or not? So the Mishnah says, the Maseches Kedushin, no, there's a practical nafkamina. So what's the best practical nafkamina? What's always the litmus test? Whether I own something or not, so we've said this several times, nafkamina for Kedushin, that's always a test case. That's what the Mishnah says in Maseches Kedushin, in the seventh parak, that there's a machlekes atanoim between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, a makadish for Ma'ase Sheni. The person is makadish and isha with a barrel of Ma'ase Sheni, what's the din? Is the Kedushin types, is the Kedushin chalana. So if you hold that Ma'ase Sheni belongs to you, it's really yours, there are just certain halachic restrictions on it, it belongs to you. You can be makadish and isha with it, it's yours, you can transfer ownership to it, it's totally yours. But if you hold that Ma'ase Sheni doesn't really belong to you, so then the Kedushin wouldn't be chal. I have the right to eat the Ma'ase Sheni. I'm transferring to the woman the right to eat the Ma'ase Sheni. So I'm enjoying it. She's enjoying it. No, but I didn't give a mamon. And the din is you have to mekadesh and isha with kesef. Kach nemar alocha moshe mesina. Kesef isha nikis be kesef. So kesef means got to be a kid in kesef. I have to give something that I own. I have to give it to her. So if I give Ma'ase Sheni, if it doesn't belong to me, so that's ena mekudeshes. So that's what the Gemara coins the phrase. This machlekes Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara uses the phrase is Ma'ase Sheni mamon hedyot. Means it belongs to me. Hedyot means a literal regular person. It's still mine in terms of bailus, or is Ma'ase Sheni mamun gavaa? Is Ma'ase Sheni belong to the Beis Hamikdash? Does it belong not to the Beis Hamikdash? The gavaa to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. Everything ultimately belongs to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. But to arts nasa levnei adam, Hashem Baruch Hu gave us rishus to use things, but Ma'ase Sheni, Hashem Baruch Hu never gave us bailus on. So that's a machlekes Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Is Ma'ase Sheni mamun hedyot, and therefore the condition would be chal. Is Ma'ase Sheni mamun gavaa, and therefore the condition would not be chal. So then the Gemara continues on in Maseches Pesachim and Maseches Sukkah and rattles off a whole bunch of other nafkaminas to the Shaila. Is Ma'ase Sheni Mamun Gavoah, Ma'ase Sheni Mamun Hedya? So in Kedushin, the Gemara has this one bizarre case, only nafkamina for Kedushin, but here the Gemara gives a few more down-to-earth questions for people who own Ma'ase Sheni. So the Gemara gives an example in Maseches Sukkah, Maseches Pesachim, concerning the mitzvah of Dalad Minim. Dalad Minim is always a good test case whether somebody owns something, because we know that Halacha says that in order to be Yotze Dalad Minim, it has to be Lochem, it has to belong to you, in terms of you have to have full-fledged bialus on this item. as we spoke about it several times, if I don't own it, if I'm merely borrowing it, that's not considered to be bailus. Machlokes Rishonim, if I own something temporarily, Kedin Lizman, Rush, or Ben Avig, we spoke about this by Rechas a few weeks ago, is that considered to be ownership? Matalmas Lahach said the Gemara concludes it's called ownership. So in order to be Yaitzid, a mitzvah Dalaminim, it for sure has to be Lachem. So what's the din if I have an Esrog that comes from my Sheni? An Esrog, I have to separate Tumas and Mises on the Esrog also. So I have, the din is that you have to separate Tumas and Mises before you can fulfill the mitzvah of Dalabinim. Because it has to be Royal Achila. If the Esrog is not Royal Achila, then you wouldn't be Yetzei the mitzvah. Maybe that's a Chisar Lachem. Also, that's a question in the Gemara. So there's no question about it. The Ferish Mishnah, that you have to separate Tumas and Mises on the Esrog. This is one of the big things that people were all excited about, the Bar Kokhba letters. We found a whole, dug up a whole bunch of correspondence between Bar Kokhba and other people. So one of the letters apparently that were found had some of the fighters of Bar Kokhba who were out in the middle of the mountain somewhere, and it was before Sukkot. So apparently they sent a letter to some, they found some correspondence. They sent a letter for people to provide them with esrogim to fulfill the mitzvah of dalabinim. So in one of the letters it says, make sure to bring us esrogim and make sure to separate meisers before you bring us. We don't want to be bothered with trumas. We're fighting a war, trying to battle the Romans. I'm talking about trumas and meisers right now. Make sure to separate the trumas and meisers before. So people are like so excited. Wow, you see that in the days of Bar Kokhba they were separate. What was the tremendous chiddush? Of course they were separating the Mishnah. The Ferish Mishnah. The Mishnah at the same time as Bar Kokhba. So all of a sudden, somehow it says the Mishnah no one gets excited about. But they found it in a dump up in something in the middle of the Judean desert. That became the greatest find in the world. So of course they were separating Tumas and Mises. I remember I was in Berlin a couple of years ago with Rabbi Shechter. We were saying Shirum in the Yeshiva there. So I think I missed your Bar Mitzvah for that one, right? Am I right? I think that was one of the trips. So I was with Rav Shechter, and one day in the afternoon, we wanted to do a little bit of touring. So they took us to one of the museums in Berlin. So one of the Jewish museums, whatever it was. So they had a copy. There was they call it the Elephantine letters or something. A Greek colony, way, way back in the back to the days of the the minimal of Tkufa by Sheni. There was a Greek colony in some place, some far-flung place out in the middle of an island off of Africa or something, and the Greeks had an army stationed there. So the Jews were Greek citizens. They were under the rule of the Greeks. So apparently there was a group of Jewish soldiers who were fighting in the Greek army in the middle of this place, in the middle of nowhere, called Elephantine. So they dug up a letter from about 2,500 years ago. They dug up a letter that apparently this Jewish garrison of the Jewish battalion of they sent a letter to the Greek government, whatever it was, that they should please get the permission during the week of Pesach not to have to eat the regular food, not to have to eat the bread. I imagine the food probably all year was probably just bread, probably wasn't too much. So they apparently got special permission. It's written down in Bichsav. They got provisions to be able to eat matzah, to be able to make their own bread for the week of, I don't know if it said Pesach, it said for 1 week during the springtime or something. It said they should be able to do their own baking, to make their own, get their own special matzahs. So I remember we were so excited, we saw that. So I remember Shechter, and he wasn't so excited. He said, what's the shout? So there were Jews who were keeping Pesach, so that's like a tremendous chiddush. The Jews were eating matzah. So it's exciting when you see it, wow, you find something somehow, archaeologically, you find that, hey, this really happened. The Jews were really keeping matzah. So we know it's true, of course we know it's true. But somehow it gives us like a little bit of excitement when you see it from somewhere else. So over here, so the fact that there were Jews separating mises on the Esrogim, so Mishnah say that. We dug up a letter from Bar Kokhba, but they actually did it. So good. So the bottom line is, so we also separate Tumas and Mises on our Esrogim. But otherwise, you can't be Yaitzeh. So it says in all the boxes, it should say in the boxes, Hufish Tumas and Mises, so even if it doesn't say, if it's a good Ashkacha, that should have happened. So the Mafish Tumas and Mises on the Esrogim. So for us, it doesn't really mean anything. When Mafish Tumas and Mises, then we're paid in the Mises Sheni, and we don't do anything with it. But in the olden days, they would separate Tumas and Mises, and then they had Mises Sheni, the Esrogim, and they were going to bring the Esrog to Yushalayim, to make it into Esrog jam in Yushalayim. But before they got around to bring it to Yushalayim, he wants to be Yaitzeh the mitzvah of Dalad Minim with it. So can you use an Esrog Shem Mises Sheni for Dalad Minim? So the Gemara says in Sukkah, and in Psochim, it's a Lachalikas HaTanoim, that if you hold that Maisa Sheni is Mom and Head Yai, so it belongs to me, so why can't I be Yaitzit Lachem? But if you hold that Maisa Sheni is Mom and Gavoa, then you have a problem. Then how can I be Yaitzit Nachol Lachem? Being Mom and Gavoa is a Chisarn of Lachem. So the Gemara says that just as you can't be Mekadosh and Isha with the Maisa Sheni, you can't be Yaitzit Mitzvah Dalaminim as well. So the Gemara would have just stopped at that point, okay. Now, medium is a good example. It's a good litmus test, as it's called lachem. But that we understand. And then the Gemara gives a few other examples. The Gemara says, what would be the din if you have an isa, if you have a dough that was made of maisa sheni grain? You separate maisa sheni from tevuah, from chita. So I took wheat of maisa sheni and I turned it into a dough. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I can eat maisa sheni. I can make myself a maisa sheni slice of pizza in Yerushalayim. I can make myself a maisa sheni matzah. That's not a problem. So comes the Gemara and says, what's the din? Am I chayav to be mafresh challah from the maisa sheni dough? What's the issue? So the bits of mafresh challah, Pasha Shlach says, it has to be reishis arisay seichem. The only time you chayav to be mafresh challah is if you own the dough. It has to be arisay seichem shalcha. So comes the Gemara and says, does maisa sheni belong to me? So if you hold maisa sheni as mum and head yoke, it belongs to me. So either there are certain limitations, there are surim, I can't eat a betumba. Those are true. But those limitations don't affect chayshim mishma. So if it meets the criteria called arisay seichem, so it's chayav in afrash eschala. But if you hold the maisa sheni as mum and gavoa, so then it doesn't belong to me. If it doesn't belong to me, so then the same way I can't be yotzei dala meaning with it. I can't be yotzei the mitzvah of afrashes. I can't be chayiv in the mitzvah of afrashes challah. Okay, so that we understand also. These are two examples. These are two good examples where there are dinim of lachem. So lachem by dalaminim, arisa seichem by afrashes challah. So these are good test cases whether my sasheni belongs to me or does belong to me. But then the Gemara throws in a third piece into the puzzle. The Gemara says that what would the din be if you have a dough of my sasheni grain and you bake it into matzah, and it happens to be Pesach. So you're not an elephantine, you're in Yerushalayim. So you want to use this maisa sheni in order to be yotzei the bits of erev teich l'matzahs. Is that okay? Is there any problem with that? Can I use the dough of maisa sheni grain in order to fulfill the mitzvah of erev teich l'matzahs? So the Gemara Pesachim has other possible technical considerations. There may be other reasons why it's no good, because there's a drasha that says, so one Tana says means you can only fulfill the mitzvah of matzah with something that's necha b'chol ha'moshavos, only something that can be eaten anywhere. Maisa sheni can only be eaten in Yerushalayim. So maybe there's a quirk, maybe there's a gzeiras hakosov that matzah is no good for maisa sheni. But leaving that aside, let's say we don't pass like that necessarily. Let's say assuming there's no such drasha, is there any other reason why you can't be eaten in the mitzvah of matzah with maisa sheni? So comes the Gemara and says the same pizma. Comes the Gemara and says, depends. If you hold like Rabbi Meir that maisa sheni is mamon gavoa, then you can't be yotzei the mitzvah matzah. If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda that maisa sheni is mamon hedyot, then you can be yotzei the mitzvah matzah. So the Gemara lumps these three dinim together: dalad minim, hafresh eschala, and the chiyuv of matzah. It will depend on do I own the item or not, and do I own it or not ultimately depends on do you say maisa sheni mamon gavoa, do you say maisa sheni mamon hedyot. So two out of these three are easily understandable. The third one is more difficult. The fact that you require lachem for dal minim, I don't need a gemara. It's a pasuk in chumash. Pkachtim lachem. The fact there's a din of lachem by chala arisei seichem, reishis arisei seichem. That's a din of lachem. So the gemara has the kasha. Bishlama dal minim ksiv lachem. Bishlama chala ksiv arisei seichem. Ela matzah miksiv matzaschem. Doesn't say be'erf tochlu matzaschem. We state is the din of lachem on the mitzvah of achilas matzah. So how can the Gemara say that according to Rabbi Meir, it says you don't own the matzah because it's maisa sheni, you're not yetzir the mitzvah? We in the world that say you have to own the matzah. Who ever heard of such a thing? You have to own the matzah. Miksiv matzaschem. So the Gemara says you're right. It doesn't say matzaschem, but it does say arisa seichem bechala. And we have a gzeri shava that compares the mitzvah of Hashem's challah to the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. How do we know? So we know already from many examples that these two mitzvahs are compared to one another. There are a lot of similarities between the two. Taylor Moshel, how do you know what type of dough is chayv in the challah? Only a dough from the chameshas bini dogan. Only a dough made out of wheat, barley, etc. Only those types of grains, pieces of grain, that you can be yaitzed in the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah with. So there are a lot of connections between the mitzvah of Hashem's challah and the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. Comes to Gemara and says, this is another connection, this is another comparison. That even though it doesn't say literally matzaschem, but it says be'erf teich l'matzes, so we derive many of the dinim of matzah from challah and vice versa. How do you know to compare the two? There's a gzeri shava. Kach nimsa l'mesh rabbeinu, the word lechem. It says lechem oini ben matzah, and it says v'yob achochim lechem ha'aretz b'challah. That's one of the official gzeri shavas out there. One of the Gemara says that you can't make up your own gzeri shav, you have to have a mesari ish v'pi ish l'mesh rabbeinu. So the Gemara says, we're telling you, we have a mesari ish v'pi ish l'mesh rabbeinu, that there is a comparison between the parasha of afresh eschala and the parasha of a mitzvah achilas matzah, and we derive many dinim one from another, and this is one of the dinim that we derive, that there's a requirement that the matzah matza has to be lochem. So inochem, it doesn't say matzaschem, but it's ke'ilu it says matzaschem. So therefore, this nafkamina is still alive. So just as there's a nafkamina where the ma'aser sheni is mamun gavoyim, mamun hedya, vis-a-vis dal minim, the nafkamina vis-a-vis afreshes chala, there's a nafkamina vis-a-vis achilas matza as well. Is that really true? Matzah tach has to be lachem? That's what the Rush writes. The Rush writes here. The Gemara tach says it. The Gemara says it. The Gemara means it. There really is a din. There's a requirement the matzah has to be a lachem. Therefore, whatever person steals somebody's matzah, so they wouldn't be yaitzeh mitzvah. It's not lachem. The same way, lakachtem lachem b'yem arishon. So the dal minim can't be stolen. It's not called lachem. So if the matzah would be stolen, also wouldn't be good. So that's when the later Acharenim raised the question, wait a second, if that's true, that the matzah has to belong to you, so we know that you can't borrow dal minim. If I borrow dal minim, it's not called lachem. Lachem, the matzah's a shoal. So what if I didn't buy the matzahs? What if I don't own the matzahs? What if I'm eating in somebody's house, and he's giving me the matzahs? He's lending me the matzahs to eat. So he didn't give me the matzahs. It's not, I didn't buy the matzahs. So maybe I'm not yet to the mitzvah. So most of the Acharenim right now, that's not the same. So when you eat in somebody's house and they give you the matzahs, they're not lending you the matzahs. What you can eat and give it back to them, but you're not giving back the matzahs. When I lend you a lulav of an eserig, and I say, can I please borrow you a lulav of an eserig? I'm borrowing it. It's not lachem, and I have to give you back this lulav of an eserig. When I invite somebody to my house and I give him matzah to eat, so I'm giving him the matzah, so I'm giving it to him with teres matan, and that's what most of the Acharenim read. That's what the Minhag HaElam is. Most people are knowing when they eat in somebody else's seder, so they rely on the fact that even if there's a din of matzaschem, even if such a din exists, but you're yaitze for sure, because when you're eating in someone's house, it's understood they're giving you the matzahs. So not everyone holds that way. There's some Acharenim who are machmer that you should actually be cutting the matzahs beforehand, that you should go out and make a kinyan on the matzahs before you yaitze the mitzvah's matzah. You should actually pay for the matzah. So making kinyan kesef, making kinyan agbos. There are some who are makbid if they're going to be a guest at somebody else's house, so they make a symbolic kinyan on the matzahs. The same way that I want to make sure I own the dal minim, so I actually buy the matzah, make kinyan agbos, kesef, whatever different kinyanim are used. There are some who have their practice, and most people don't do that. So years ago, in my parents' house, I used to always ask my father, want to be kind of the matzahs that I would eat, so I made a kinyan agbos before yontif. In my in-laws' house, all the years for Pesach, so I used to make a symbolic kinyan on the matzah. So now I make my own Pesach, so now I buy the matzah, so I own the matzah. So I'm not machmir to go ahead and make a kinyan for everybody else. No one else has bothered me about it. My son hasn't yet come home with this chumrah from yeshiva. Probably by next year he'll already have this chumrah, so we'll have to deal with it next year. But right now, we rely on the fact that everybody's understood. But the minhag HaElam everybody does is that it's ke'ilu, they own the matzah. They literally bought the matzah with the fact that I give it to them to eat. It's understood that I'm being machmir at them, the matzah with teres. But Achopanim, this is all part of the same assumption that there really is a din of lachem. So although it doesn't say lachem feirish, the matzah is derived, at least when similarly the Gemara is derived from a gzeir shava from a challah. So here we have a whole series of Gemaras that are telling us this idea that ma'aser sheni is maybe mamon gavoy, maybe mamon hedya, nafkamina is for kedusha, nafkamina is for matzah, nafkamina for challah, nafkamina for dal aminim. A running question whether ma'aser sheni is mamon gavoy, ma'aser sheni mamon hedya. So from this, from next week, we'll try to finish up a little bit about ma'aser sheni and some other related topics in terms of how bialas can sometimes be impacted not only by Yisurim, but by Kedusha, by mitzvahs as well. Hopefully mitzvah next week will be, I think, the last of the shiurim for before the summer, when it's all mitzvah next Monday. So we'll break for a couple of weeks, and then we're open to suggestions for next year. So we'll